This is New England Public Media News. Good afternoon, I'm Kari Njiri. Scientists have long claimed that eyewitness testimony can be both highly convincing and incredibly unreliable. According to the Innocence Project, three-quarters of convictions overturned by DNA evidence came down to faulty eyewitness testimony. Observers say Massachusetts has made progress in making sure eyewitness testimony is accurate, but problems persist. Today, we begin a three-part series, Questioning the Witness. New England Public Media's Karen Brown looks at the evolving science of eyewitness testimony and the people with the greatest stake in how it's used.
Ramon Valle is facing 20 years in prison for a home invasion in Springfield. He refused a plea deal that could have gotten him out in five. He was sure he'd be acquitted, says his lawyer, Jessica LeClaire.
He had faith in the criminal justice system. He thought that he would not be convicted because, you know, it wasn't him.
But largely on the strength of two eyewitness accounts, Valle, a 42-year-old father of four with no previous criminal record, was convicted. When LeClaire took his case on appeal, she argued that police did a terrible job collecting the eyewitness evidence.
Something that the George Floyd protests highlighted is that each police department is its own entity. There's no real systemic oversight.
Many experts say this should not still be happening. In the past two decades, federal and state reports and rulings were meant to catch the criminal justice system up on the science of eyewitness identification. What used to be convincing in court, scientists say, is often simply not true.
Then I heard two loud bangs, like firecrackers. I looked up and saw two young men run out from the sack of suds.
Eyewitness testimony is among the most persuasive evidence in the trial system. Think of all the movies and TV shows where the witness points at the defendant and says, "That's the guy."
Ms. Riley, are those two young men present in the courtroom today?
Yes, sir, they are.
Could you point them out for me, please, ma'am?
They sitting right there.
That's from the courtroom caper, My Cousin Vinny. But it happens in real life, too. Jessica LeClaire describes a witness being questioned in her client's case.
Do you see the person who did this? And they pointed to him in the courtroom. And then she does that again and again. It's really difficult for a jury not to be persuaded by that.
Historically, juries were expected to figure out the credibility of eyewitnesses on their own, and it was up to the lawyers to point out any inconsistencies. There was little concept of eyewitness science in the legal profession, and little pushback when a witness claimed to remember exactly what happened.
They believe that the brain works like a video camera, that you can walk around the world and you're sort of like recording things, and then you can just sort of play it back. That's why it played a role. Oh, such a strong role in so many convictions.
Radha Natarajan heads the New England Innocence Project.
Because when an eyewitness said to a juror, "Yes, I was there, I saw him, he's the man," they had to basically defer to that, and they didn't have any reason to doubt it. But now we have lots of reasons to doubt it.
Those doubts gained steam in the 1990s, when DNA started to exonerate people in prison. The Innocence Project has traced 70% of those false convictions to bad eyewitness testimony. In 1999, U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno put out a report on ways to make eyewitness identifications more reliable, from asking open-ended questions to designing fairer lineups.
And there was this sense in the air that, okay, this is going to fix everything. And it didn't.
Lisa Steele is a Massachusetts-based defense attorney.
The Department of Justice sent copies of this booklet out to every police department in the country, and as best one could tell, most of them went promptly into the nearest recycling bin.
Yet there has been some headway. About a decade ago, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts assembled a committee to study eyewitness testimony. Their 2013 report focused on educating police, judges, and juries on the science of memory. Steele said the SJC report was a good step, but
I think it could have gone further than it did.
That's because the report only made recommendations.
Some of the police departments are doing a phenomenal job. The problem is they're not required to.
2 years after the SJC report, a court case called Commonwealth versus Gomes did lead to changes in the courtroom. Now judges must instruct juries on factors that affect the accuracy of eyewitness testimony. But some lawyers say that doesn't always work. So let's get back to the case of Ramon Valle.
This is Springfield, Massachusetts. It's May of 2014, and my client was working as a personal care assistant on the first floor of a 5-unit apartment building.
Attorney Jessica LeClaire says all parties agree that two women came to the building that night and made a lot of noise. So her client, Valle,
came outside and said, could you quiet down, please? And those ladies continued to cause a ruckus, and he asked them again to leave. This created some tension.
Later, the women were having a party in one of the apartments. They said two men stormed the place and threatened them with guns. When the police arrived, LeClaire says Valle came out on his porch to tell them he heard the shots. Meanwhile, the women were ushered into the back seat of a cruiser, and they told an officer,
"We think it's those men on the porch." And my client is immediately arrested.
According to LeClaire, the women were then driven to where Valle was standing in handcuffs.
And they both again identify him. Essentially, that's where the investigation ends.
This kind of identification is called a show-up, where a suspect is stopped at the crime scene and a witness points them out right there. LeClaire and many others say this is inherently suggestive, since there's only one person to choose from. In Valle's case, LeClaire says police made additional mistakes. They left the women alone together to confirm each other's stories. They asked them to identify the suspect while he was cuffed, looking guilty, instead of bringing them all back to the police station for a photo array.
So there were investigative tools police had to minimize the risk that that was a bad, unreliable identification. They didn't take those steps.
It's not that LeClaire thinks the women were lying. She believes they simply recognized her client from the earlier dispute. And even though there was no forensic evidence, like fingerprints or a weapon, Valle was convicted at trial. On appeal, LeClaire asked for the official Springfield Police eyewitness procedures and found they had not been updated since the SJC report. A spokesman for the Springfield Police declined to address Valle's case. He told me the department follows the SJC's recommendations, but did not provide a specific policy for the Springfield Police.
That's problematic, because if there's no policy in place, they're not required to follow those best practices.
Police and prosecutors acknowledge that show-ups, when a witness IDs a suspect at the crime scene, can be suggestive. But Western Massachusetts prosecutor Stephen Gagne says they're also very useful, not only for catching the person who did the crime, but clearing someone who didn't. He had a recent case where an elderly woman described a man who snatched her purse in downtown Northampton.
This person seen matching the description was stopped about a block away about 10 minutes later.
The police drove a witness by that corner, and she said, yeah, that's the guy. In this case, Gagne says they then found other evidence, like the victim's wallet in his pocket. They could have brought the man back to the police station for a less hurried identification, but what if it wasn't him?
So now you've detained the person for 2 to 3 hours to conduct an ideal photographic array procedure pursuant to the SJC, and then come to find out if it's not even the right person. That's even a greater intrusion, I think, on their privacy interests.
Radha Natarajan from the New England Innocence Project says show-ups have largely been skipped over in reforms. She understands that police may not have any other basis to detain a likely suspect.
And they don't want to let the person go.
And in your view, better to have the risk be the other way, like we're going to risk losing the right guy to make sure that we don't get the wrong guy?
Well, that's not my view. That's actually the underlying premise of the entire criminal legal system, is that it's better for a guilty person to go, for 10 guilty people to go free, than for one innocent person to be in prison.
Ramon Valle is about 5 years into his sentence. He's lost 2 appeals. His lawyer, Jessica LeClaire, is now working to reduce his time. She speaks to him by phone every few weeks. She recorded one conversation and asked how he was doing.
My days are full of frustration and anger. Waking up every morning is like a reminder to me of how the system failed me.
Valle says he thinks about his children every day.
They're my first thoughts in the morning and my last thoughts at night.
He thinks about being with them again if, as he puts it, the justice system eventually gets it right. For New England Public Media, I'm Karen Brown.
Tomorrow, we'll meet some people convicted by eyewitness testimony decades before the recent changes, as our series, Questioning the Witness, continues. This is New England Public Media.